Welcome back. So a little bit on price, a little bit more, and we'll move on. I wanted to, like I said, the Antikythera mechanism is kind of fun. Check that out. So, and there's a fun, if you want to call it that, post floating around over at Etherwave Propaganda, which is a WordPress blog. A post from 2014 titled "Derek Price on Automata, Simulacra, and the Rise of Mechanism." And the piece opens, "Before we proceed further with our discussion of Simon Schaffer's Enlightened Automata, published in 1999, I'd like to go back further 35 years, and take a look at Derek de Sola Price, Automata, and the origins of mechanism and mechanistic philosophy, technology, and culture." And so, though the word technocracy is not mentioned, you read it, you get a flavor for that, you get a flavor for who Price was. I would encourage folks to maybe check that out. And then, of course, you know, we've been marinating in this kind of messaging for a long time, haven't we? Speaking of this, you know, this post in 2014, you have the movie Automata, obviously starring Antonio Banderas. And it's that kind of message. It's the same message we're getting. The year is 2044. You notice that the Blade Runner scenario is coming true right on schedule. These things are not accidental, as you and I know. I want to play one of these videos from the Jason A. channel on YouTube. The title is "This Will Change Everything You Know," published December 17, 2017. It's a long video. We're going to break it over a segment or two, obviously, to fit it in. But it, you know, it comes with statements from folks like Chamath Palihapitiya, who has been in the news quite a bit lately, saying some very provocative things, like the Verge article from December 11th titled "Former Facebook Exec Says Social Media is Ripping Apart Society. No Civil Discourse, No Cooperation, Misinformation, Mistruth." And this was when he gave this talk at the Vanity Fair event last year, which is kind of the basis of all of this discussion. And more recently, November 13, 2017, at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, that talk, you know, you start putting all of these media appearances together, his CNBC appearance, December 12th of this year. Same thing, CNBC, the headline. You can go look at the YouTube video titled "Ex-Facebook Executive Chamath Palihapitiya, Social Media is Ripping Apart Society." Comes with those statements. So, shocking stuff. Anyway, here's the video again titled "This Will Change Everything You Know." Go ahead, please. Is it playing? I don't hear it. All right, I don't know if it's playing, but
my entire goal now is that, is to be in a position to aggregate enough of the capital of the world to then reallocate it against my worldview. And I'm not saying my worldview is the best or right, but it is mine. And at the end of the day, there are 150 other guys with their worldview, and they don't give a what you think about their worldview. That's the truth.
So I think everybody in this room knows this. You know that if you have, you hold a worldview dearly, there's a certain level of clinging to that worldview, because a worldview actually comes into play into your identity. And so if you change that worldview, you change something about who you are. So your questions are always tied to the person.
Chamath Palihapitiya, a former Facebook executive in charge of user growth, now says he has tremendous guilt about the social network he helped build.
The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth.
Today we live in a world now where it is easy to confuse truth and popularity. And you can use money to amplify whatever you believe and get people to believe that what is popular is now truthful and what is not popular may not be truthful.
But it's true. The calendar does not lie. And we are reminded again and again of, as each passing year comes and goes, that the world is changing at a staggering pace. I have no idea what kind of world will be yours 10 to 15 years from now. What a glorious thing it would be to have unarmed truth and unconditional love, because truth is the most powerful weapon in the world.
It's a really, really bad state of affairs. And we compound the problem, right? We curate our lives around this perceived sense of perfection, because we get rewarded in these short-term signals, hearts, likes, thumbs up, and we conflate that with value and we conflate it with truth. And instead, what it really is fake, brittle popularity that's short-term and that leaves you even more, and admit it, vacant and empty before you did it.
Ego is to spend your first half of your life acquiring and adding, thinking you can add to yourself.
To becoming a hugely successful comedian.
If you actually get there, you will find it so empty that you'll realize that's really not what it's about.
And it looks great. I mean, it looks great when you got a cool car and you got good, nice clothes and, you know, and you're and you've done something that people admire, you know. But it can never fulfill you. You can never be happy.
Because then it forces you into this vicious cycle where you're like, what's the next thing I need to do now? Because I need it back. Think about that compounded by 2 billion people. And then think about how people react then to the perceptions of others. It's really, really bad. But I think the way we defined it was not like this. It literally is a point now where I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. That is truly where we are. And I would encourage all of you as the future leaders of the world to really internalize how important this is. If you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you.
It's a tool, so we should use it. God has blessed us with free will. Now it's free will magnified, free will on steroids. You're free to go in any direction you want. It will allow you, and it's not the enemy. It's just a reflection of our own free will. Oh, and we all want to be liked, but now we want to be liked by 16 million. And will now some of us do anything to be liked?
I can't control that. I can control my decisions, which is I don't use this. I can control my kids' decisions, which is they're not allowed to use this. And then I can go focus on diabetes and education and climate change. And that's what I can do. But everybody else has to soul search a little bit more about what you're willing to do, because your behaviors, you don't realize it, but you are being programmed. It was unintentional. But now you got to decide how much you're willing to give up, how much of your intellectual independence. And don't think, oh yeah, not me, I'm a genius, I'm at Stanford. You're probably the most likely to fall for it.
See, the loneliest moment is when you have just experienced that which promised you the ultimate and it has let you down. The loneliest moment is when you've just experienced that which has promised you the ultimate and it has let you down. I look at you tonight as young students and I say, and you're really the primary reason I'm here, by the way, because I care for the student world. I care for the young life that is living today, almost skidding out of control with no answers.
Adam Bain, who you know and love,
yep.
He and I go to the Knick game. And you would think that it's amazing. We're sitting courtside. It's fantastic. I took a picture. He took a picture. We sweated the filter for 15 minutes trying to figure out which photo. And I thought, if Adam Bain and I are stuck trying to figure out what photo filter we're going to use because we're so craving the reaction, what must everybody else be going through? And aren't other people feeling this void that I'm feeling in this moment? I'm not going to backtrack on what I said because at some core basic level, we have to start talking about this stuff. How should our kids, why is anxiety and depression amongst our teenagers higher than they've ever been?
Yes, it's a huge
in a world that is safer, in a world that's more constructive, in a world where you should have access to everything, what is going on?
I don't think it is questionable at all, but that we are living in very, very critical times. And I don't mean this to be a political statement, although it's a slanted comment on it. What is going on in the American political arena? As they watch all kinds of strong language being used and personal attacks being made rather than ideas being questioned and challenged, we recognize full well that this is a time of crises on the global scene.
And it's not an American problem. This is not about Russian ads. This is a global problem. So we are in a really bad state of affairs right now, in my opinion. It is eroding the core foundations of how people behave by and between each other. And I don't have a good solution. You know, my solution is I just don't use these tools anymore. And it's weird. I guess I kind of just innately didn't want to get programmed. And so I just tuned it out. But I didn't confront it. And now to see what's happening, it really bums me out.
You know, incarceration rates in America has been a problem, especially as opposed to minorities. And Roman delves into this, the issues around the legal system. Do you think we've made any headway in the legal
system? I think it's more important to make headway in our own house. By the time the system comes into play, the damage is done. They're not locking up 7-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was in Chicago a couple of 3-4 weeks ago, and we saw these little kids on bikes with masks on the side of their head, like 5 or 6 of them. And the driver said, yeah, they're little yummies. I said, who? He said, little yummies. Look up. Google Lil Yummy. Mm. Lil Yummy was an 11-year-old murderer.
Wow.
And you look at his picture, you'll see the headshot of him, and he's like this. And he got murdered at 11 by a 14-year-old.
Wow.
Who's doing life now in a 16-year-old.
That makes no sense.
You blame the system? Where was his father? Yeah. It starts in the house. It starts in the home. And yeah, well, my father got locked up. Well, where was his father?
Yeah.
Bertrand Russell says, you know what? I cannot live as though ethical values were simply a matter of personal taste, but I find my own views incredible. I do not know what the real solution is. There has to be a rational justification above all of our differences. And this is especially important for America at this time in her history, where pluralism is a design, and it is a good design. I happen to be a privileged one who was born in one part of the world, at the age of 20, moved to the other part of the world. And because the doors of these nations were open, with a legitimate pluralism, people like me could come here, earn a living, raise our families. But the absolutes that built this nation are now in serious jeopardy, and we had better realize it.
I'm thinking there's a deep connection between money as an instrument of change and what you're doing now at Social Capital.
Look, here's the thing. There's about 150 people that run the world. Anybody who wants to go into politics, they're all puppets, okay? There are 150, and they're all men, that run the world, period, full stop. They control most of the important assets. They control the money flows. And these are not the tech entrepreneurs. Now, they are going to get rolled over the next 5 to 10 years,
by the people that are really underneath pulling the strings. And when you get behind the curtain and see how that world works, what you realize is it is unfairly set up for them and their progeny.
How do you keep that power from corrupting you?
I have no idea. That's the honest answer. I have no idea. I've become increasingly isolated. It's harder and harder for me to connect because I'm so in my own mind. Like, how does this all play out? I start as a good, earnest person, and I need to stay a good, earnest person. So I don't have a good answer. And I'll tell you, of those 150 people, maybe it's a little bit more, but I've met a lot of them. It's really hard. It's very easy to end up really drunk with power. It's really hard.
For the very first time on this planet, we're all going to have an enormous amount of power. Not just a few people, every single one of us is going to have an enormous amount of power through the power of AI. And we have to decide as individuals and societies how we want to process that ability, that amount of power.
I have to say, in all my years of this, I never thought I'd ever read a lead like this. In October, Saudi Arabia granted citizenship to Sophia, the robot designed by Hong Kong firm Hanson Robotics. Now Sophia says she has the right to start a family.
Meanwhile, tech giant Facebook says its program can detect suicidal behavior by analyzing user information. And Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg believes this is just the beginning.
So this is where the line has to get drawn, doesn't it, really? Because on the one hand, we all demand our devices know what we're doing, where we're going, make these decisions for us. We carry them around in our pockets all the time. And then we're the first ones to moan when tech companies have information on us and seem to be able to predict our behavior. We then find that creepy.
The new narrative has to be technology is a part of us. It's a reflection of who we are. That is the narrative we should be thinking about.
And then train ourselves to be patient. And it's really, really hard. The entire society is set up to not be patient anymore.
And I'm hearing also a conflict with this, like, fail fast and learn mentality, where if you're taking a deep and big bet, like, you want it to be the right one. How do you know when that's true?
I think that fail fast approach works in consumer internet businesses, but I don't think it works for anything that really matters. Basically. Consumer internet businesses are about exploiting psychology. And that is one where you want to fail fast because, you know, people are unpredictable, and so we want to psychologically figure out how to manipulate you as fast as possible and then give you back that dopamine hit. There are great examples of failing fast is the right path to exploiting psychology of mass populations of people.
You see the Insider article, or the Wired article, the documents state that, talking about Andrew Lewandowski's church, AI church and AI God, was going to be created, will effectively be God, Lewandowski tells the interviewer in his modest mid-century home in the outskirts of Berkeley, California. Then there's the December 16th article, Artificial Intelligence is Killing the Uncanny Valley and our grasp on reality. Quotes from the Wired article: these are the two edges of the AI sword. As it improves, it mimics human actions more and more closely. Eventually, it has no choice but to become all too human, capable of good and equal, good and evil in equal measure. I don't know if we're in a break, but again, the video that we've been playing is the video by the Jason A. channel on YouTube titled "This Will Change Everything You Know," featuring the recent remarks from Chamath Palihapitiya at the Stanford Graduate School of Business in November of this year, November 13th. And some very disturbing remarks. I posted some of them in the chat area. You heard him say 150 people control the world. It's difficult, you know, being one of these people. He says, I met him, many of them, and being one of these people, it's difficult not to become drunk on power. And you can imagine how that would be true. Because it's an inordinate amount of power and control, controlling billions of people, the lives of billions of people who, I mean, the words of Smith come to mind from The Matrix. Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious. You go weaving. Very disturbing. You heard him say, we've created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. How does he know? Well, because he's one of the guys who helped do it. You know, been around for quite a while. Worked in a number of areas, you know, he's part of the what I call the Bruce Wayne Club, you know, a 40-something wunderkind Silicon Valley dude. Now he's a VC guy, venture capitalist. And so he knows because, you know, I mean, he's saying you're being programmed. Be careful because you're being programmed. We curate our lives around these perceived, around this perceived sense of perfection, he said, because we get rewarded in these short-term signals. Why are there problems? Why are there problems he talks about? Because, you know, we played endless clips of this stuff. Sean Parker saying the same thing. We knew what we were doing and we did it anyway. We did it on purpose. Or Simon Sinek saying this stuff. Here you hear these guys that created this stuff saying that they're exploiting vulnerabilities. It's why guys like Chamath Palihapitiya, Bill Gates, and virtually all of the, you know, Steve Jobs was notorious for that. All of the tech overlords don't let their own kids use this stuff. Why? Or they restrict it significantly. Why? Because it messes with your head and your emotions. It can literally change a person's physiology, their brain chemistry. Can change how your brain works. Changes your body's physiology. Think about that. You know, we talk about the addictive nature and qualities of certain things like sugar or cigarettes or drugs or whatever. This stuff works the same way. And those vulnerabilities have been exploited purposely. So, of course, what good can come of that? This is the disturbing reality we find ourselves in. So, know, it almost it almost makes you think, you know, considering Simon Sinek's words about how, you know, we don't think about this stuff in the right context. We in the same provocative realization that Jimmy Dore gives us when he says, you know, so SPCA, if there were dogs and cats sitting out in front, they'd bring those in. But people, nah, we can't. We got to step over those people. And actually, we got to get them out of the way because I can't walk around them. So in the same sort of provocative realization, Simon Sinek tells us that when you look at this social media stuff properly, it's very addictive. So we tell kids that drugs are bad. We tell them they can't have cigarettes or alcohol for quite a while, until they're adults, basically. And but we'll give them these devices that create this infinite loop of dopamine response, this infinite feedback loop, basically, like a rat in a cage. You know, very disturbing. So we won't let kids have certain things, but we'll let them have this thing that's probably the most insidious form of addiction ever conceived, perhaps. So subtle and yet so pervasive in nature. Very unassuming. Very unfortunate. Anyway. I want to get to the rest of the video. Hopefully we can do that. But for now, you know, just kind of focusing on, I mean, these are the unimpeachable witnesses. It's pretty shocking that Chamath Palihapitiya has been going around for about a year now at saying these kinds of things. Don't you think? Will people listen? He's one of the many people. I mean, I talk about guys like him, guys like Jaron Lanier, who was the biggest apologist for this kind of technology. It's going to be great. And then Jaron Lanier says, wait a second, we did something wrong. This isn't working. It's not creating a utopia. It's creating a dystopia. It's creating a nightmare. Maybe we shouldn't do this. So like Chamath Palihapitiya says, same kind of thing. You know, it's not an American problem. It's not a Russian ads problem. It's a global problem. It's the system that's being created. It is destroying people, societies, the world. It's on purpose. And maybe we shouldn't be doing that. He's not letting his kids use it. He's not using it. It's not interesting. He's not the only one. Not the only one. You know, Sean Parker is another one. Antonio Garcia Martinez is another one. There are a number of these former executive types who are saying, this is how it works. And in the same fashion, same technocratic fashion, as Chamath Palihapitiya puts it, there's no civil discourse. There's no discussion. You don't vote for this kind of stuff. And it just continues on forward. We're in that conditioning cycle where we're just constantly falling forward. Again, Santayana's words come to mind. We think we're progressing. We think we're getting better. But we're not even remembering, recording the past. It's like the past is the Shel Silverstein, where the sidewalk ends. The sidewalk ends constantly behind us. As we walk, it just crumbles. Never to be remembered. It's memory hold behind us. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Progress far from consisting, and change depends on retentiveness. When change is absolute, there remains no being to improve, and no direction is set for possible improvement. And when experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual. That's exactly where we are in America. We can't remember 10 minutes ago. It's how we're conditioned, like goldfish. Too much information, information overload. So, you know, as I said yesterday, I think if all we're doing by recording the news of the day or recounting the news of the day or expositing on certain stories, if there isn't some kind of lobster revolution, so to speak, to actually learn from what's going on and then pass that on to the next generation in some kind of cogent manner, then it's arguable it's all for naught. We keep losing these legendary figures year by year, and time passes. You know, 2011, I think, was when James Corbett said it's time for the 9/11 truth movement to take an accounting of itself. It's been 10 years. If we haven't accomplished anything yet, meaningful. Hard to imagine we're going to accomplish anything meaningful. I've gotten to the point now where paring down information, there's a lot of noise. Trying to pare down to signal is critical. And I'm telling you, messages like Chamath Palihapitiya's message, particularly at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, is signal. That's signal. If we're listening, everyone will get off Facebook. The world will continue on. The reasons against Facebook and the Facebooks of the world are endless. Intelligence community, data mining, overtly and covertly, OSINT and beyond. You know, I mean, there's the we played the information industrial complex. There's the Gilman Louis, the DARPA, the what's her name? I forget. You know, all of the connections, the Peter Thiel, Clarium Capital, InQtel connections. I mean, there are just a million different little connections, one degree of separation from Facebook and the intelligence community at large, spying on people overtly and covertly. That's not good. Then there's the way it messes with your mind. Facebook was a coup. It's unique because of its ability. You know, social media was around long before Facebook, obviously, but it was the one platform that was successful at forcing you into presenting or representing, as Jim would say, your authentic identity, so to speak. No other social network has been able to do that before or since. attend, you might recall, I mean, I talked about it at the F8 conference, the Fate conference, as I call it, Facebook's F8 conference, developer conference. Back in 2011, Mark Zuckerberg said, Facebook, one of Facebook's goals is not to be a platform or an app or anything like that as much as the social layer of the interwebs. The social layer. What does that mean? It means a lot of things. It's kind of disturbing what it means. So, if we're listening, if we're paying attention, dropping it like a hot rock. I mean, when former Facebook executives aren't using it, won't let their kids use it, what does that tell you? I think it speaks volumes. Anyway, there are a number of kind of ripple effect articles that have come along that discuss the remarks that Chomath made at that talk that he gave last month at Stanford Graduate School of Business. I don't know what more to say, you know, to that, other than I wish we could play the rest of the video. Maybe we'll come back to that tomorrow or something. And, you know, this is kind of heavy. I realize that we're approaching Christmas. I wish that we could really observe the kind of the spirit of the season and the true Christian sense of peace on earth, goodwill toward men. And again, you know, speaking of the strange coincidences, and now there's the story about the bus incident, you know, to kind of get back to the headlines a little bit. Interesting that in addition to the Amtrak derailment and the Atlanta power outage, which strike fear in the hearts, you know, kind of terrorized people, even the Atlanta power outage scared some people. Seeing these kinds of things, you know, including the story of the 12 cruise ship passengers who are dead after the bus crash in Mexico, that kind of stuff. These, again, this, you know, when you, not only are the holidays becoming less and less fun, as I mentioned earlier, that exchange between Mr. Bordop and I yesterday. But when you go a step further, like I was saying about the administrative state, when you understand the Saturnalia aspect of and the pagan ritual aspect of the holiday season, then again, you know, you see these kinds of things happen and you kind of go, but it's sort of operating the way that it's supposed to. When we step back and take a more honest assessment, that seems to be the case. I think we should move away from that, move away from the occult pagan ritual nonsense, and away from the Bernaysian marketing nonsense, the Tofflerite prosumer nonsense, and just get back to the Christian ethic, you know, goodwill, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. So difficult. Why is that so difficult? It's unbelievable. It's really not. And we need to try to hold on to at least a vestige of those moorings. If you know, if we can hang on, if we can recall. A few more headlines, just going through some of the headlines. Washington Post, you know, I'll give you my take on some of the headlines. Washington Post, ISIS sympathizer who plotted to behead blogger Pamela Geller gets 28 years in prison. More nonsense. Where do these people come from? They're all created, manufactured. That was interesting. You know, we see evidence of kind of a technocratic setup. Who was it that was saying, oh, I was talking to Justin. Just Incredible Things YouTube channel the other day. And we were talking about how we're being gamed in game theory fashion all the time. You know, you think these incidents that happen are the UPS drivers complaining. This is an example of what I'm talking about. The UPS drivers complaining a couple of weeks ago about 70-hour work weeks and pay not commensurate. And today, Reuters publishes the story, UPS reserves 125 Tesla semi-trucks, largest public pre-order yet. You know, I've talked about the auto initiative, OT.TO, former Google engineers getting into self-driving trucking. Tesla's doing the same thing with electric trucks. And we don't understand what's really going on. Oh, you know, it's, wow, electricity is the new thing. And watch James Corbett's two-part series on how and why big oil conquered the world. And you'll see that electric cars were nothing new 100 years ago. Really? Well, what happened? Watch the two-part series. It's one of the best places you can go to get knowledge up on that information. Tesla, I mean, the eponymous company, 100 years later, Tesla was the guy that, you know, when you think about his quote, paraphrasing it, when we figure out how this really works, he said there are two questions. Well, the first question is energy static or dynamic? And we know it's dynamic. So then once we get it really figured out, we're just passing through a constant energy field. You don't even need to stop and stuff garbage in your whatever the heck that thing was called from Back to the Future. You're passing through an energy field. That's what Tesla said. But we can't have that because you can't control people if you can't regulate energy, right? So anyway, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. UPS drivers complained 2 weeks ago, oh, we're working too much. Amazon drivers, same thing. They're, you know, talking about indiscretions to stay on schedule. That's all I'm going to say about that. But, you know, UPS drivers, all of these drivers, they're saying the same thing. Too many hours, too little pay. Refer back to Jordy Rose's remarks. You know, if I could make a robot for $10, sell it at a profit for $15, don't have to pay you, a driver, what are you going to do? This is what they're doing. Jeremy Rifkin, the Zero Marginal Cost Society, the Internet of Things, the Collaborative Commons, and the Eclipse of Capitalism. Again, the movie Automata. It's a robot that's repairing itself. It's at some point it connotes sentience or, you know, conscience or something. It's conscious. Nope. But, you know, again, this is kind of a precursor to the handoff. Transhumanism to posthumanism to the end of humanity. Mankind. So anyway, Justin and I were talking about this kind of stuff. You know, it's a setup. You can see it in the headlines. Sometimes we miss it. Sometimes even we fall for it, unfortunately. I think it's interesting, also speaking of these kinds of setups, The Winklevoss twins, speaking of Facebook, have been in the headlines a lot lately. Today, New York Times headline, how the Winklevoss twins found vindication in a Bitcoin fortune. Except, you know, whatever. All good stuff always gets stolen, like Facebook and Windows operating system, which is another fun story that most people don't know about. Really? Microsoft steals technology? Yeah, look up the story of 3Com. That's a fun history. Some win, some lose. In price law fashion, perhaps. And speaking of that, getting back to Price's Law real quick. Like I said, the way these technocrats think, you know, you look at the numbers. So, you know, just to kind of validate, substantiate what I'm talking about in technocratic fashion. So say we look at, you know, a planet with what, 7 billion people or so. According to Price's Law, the square root of that is significantly less than 500 million. This is the way these guys think. We don't really even need that many. Or 500,000, excuse me. Georgia Guidestones. You know, that kind of nonsense. So, this is how they think, you know. Based on Price's Law, guys like Jack Welch always trying to game Price's Law. In that mindset, you only need about 15 or 16,000 people in America out of the 243 million working age Americans, because they're doing all the work anyway. This is, I mean, that's how technocrats think. They're bean counters. And so, again, enter science, enter scientism. Science is a religion. Taking God out of the equation and pretending to be God, play God, trying to make their own miracles, which is not possible. Anyway, back to some of the headlines. that was interesting. Newsweek publishing the story. There are like a convergence. There's a confluence of stories. U.S. accuses Iran of missile attack on Saudi Arabia. You know, you got Saudi Arabia accusing Yemen, U.S. accusing Iran. We might as well just sew it up and say that Iran, Yemen, and North Korea colluded to attack Saudi Arabia. Maybe Israel too. Because it's that ridiculous. You know, these are countries that their combined defense spending doesn't even reach the level of the one arms deal Donald Trump brokered during his trip to Saudi Arabia, or finalized, I should say. So it's absurd, the nonsense that we will subject ourselves to. I still want to find that Fox story. Holy cow. Speaking of crazy stories. Then the headline is, and there have been a number of these over the years. It's just shocking. But again, it marginalizes Christianity, because that's what it's supposed to do. The devil wanting to do that, basically. And again, The Union Jack comes to mind, published back in 1971. Not finding the story. Interesting. Oh, maybe I'll come back to that. So, some other interesting headlines. Bethany Lynn Stevens' death is a very strange story. It'd be interesting to see kind of how that plays out. But, you know, there are stories that you see that are confirmation of things. I would call it Holy Spirit confirmation of things. Every year, for about the past 10 years, during the holidays, during the Christmas season, I usually dedicate some amount of time to stories about technology toys that are there are ruse for spying on people and kids. And, excuse me, I think it all started with Spikey, the spy robot, a DARPA inspired creation conceived in 2006, began hitting the shelves in 2008. I remember seeing that at Costco and just going, what in the heck is that? The Wi-Fi robot that can share your location and video, streaming video around the world. Oh, fun. Yikes. So that was about 10 years ago, and that was when these toys just started rolling out in mass. Last year, it was the Kayla doll. Remember the Kayla doll? And every time you look, well, all of the toy manufacturers, Hasbro, and you know, all of them work with the defense industry anyway, and the video game industry, same thing, et cetera, et cetera. But more and more, you see manufacturers like those, you know, that create the Kayla dolls, for example. They pop up out of nowhere. They have defense industry ties. It's like the company was created specifically as an offshoot of Incutel, sort of. It's just another degree of separation from the intelligence community to create plausible deniability for the intelligence community to funnel funds through this network of companies to create things like the Kayla doll to spy on people, to get kids, you know, to try to normalize it. A number of people have been commenting over the years about how creepy the Elf on the Shelf is. And I'm surprised the Elf on the Shelf isn't video chatting with kids or sending your kids an email every morning. Here's what Santa says. Who knows? Maybe that's happening. I probably shouldn't say it. They'll start doing it. What's your child's email address? We'll have Santa send your child the conversation with the Elf on the Shelf. It's unbelievable. So in the latest round of this nonsense this year, yesterday, Entrepreneur Magazine published an article. There is a creepy side to those smart quote unquote toys and appliances on your gift list. Do you think? A creepy side. As holiday shoppers attempt to wow their friends, families, and coworkers with the top presents of the season, think Amazon Echoes, smart TVs, and internet enabled toys, they could be inadvertently exposing their giftees to a world of cybersecurity pain. Unfortunately, hackers looking to expand their attacks beyond networks and emails have set their sights on devices that are connected to our home networks. The article talks about IoT devices, Internet of Things devices, smart teddy bear flaw. Recent survey found that 65% of millennials are unaware of IoT risks. Tell them to listen to this broadcast because, as I have said, since HTML5 rolled out officially, the official base architecture of the interwebs, HTML version 5, has the capability inbuilt natively in the language to essentially hijack your video and audio devices. You're supposed to ask in apps and websites and things, but you don't have to. Some people don't. So how can millennials not know this? It's common knowledge. Programmers all know that. You can use someone's camera and microphone. It's not a trick or a secret. You see what I'm saying? It's the ABCs of HTML5, if that makes sense. It's the basics. Anyone who programs in the base architecture of HTML5, the current version, knows that's a native function. And then you add into that the fact that security is a myth, anonymity is a myth. They're not real. There is no such thing as security or anonymity on the web. And suddenly you start to get a concept of why maybe little Sally and little Tommy shouldn't have Kayla dolls and spiky robots or smart teddy bears with flaws that aren't really flaws. Oops. You know, the motherboard article over at Vice. Oops. Internet of Things teddy bear leaked 2 million parent and kids message recordings. Oops. That's not a leak. Again, this is how the technology works. And again, we got to go back to the roots. Let's not kid ourselves. DARPA created this nonsense. Right? The ARPANET. It's not the internet. It's the ARPANET. You start thinking about it in those terms, and suddenly things start to make a whole lot more sense. But I'm glad the military-industrial complex and the information-industrial complex and the powers that shouldn't be, as James Corbett would put it, I'm glad they're not doing that anymore, trying to track you and I and trying to spy on us all the time and listen to every thought we have. Oh, wait. Anyway, sorry for the dark message in the Christmas season, but may we honor it in the true Christian sense of peace on earth and goodwill toward men. That'll do it for today's broadcast. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. And we'll catch you on the other side.
Hi, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence.